Well, the first days are the hardest days. Don't you worry anymore. 'Cause when life looks like easy street, there is danger at your door. Think this through with me. Let me know your mind. Whoa, what I want to know is, are you kind? It's a buck's dancer's choice, my friend. Better take my advice. You know all the rules by now and the fire from the ice. Will you come with me? Won't you come with me? Whoa, what I want to know, will you come with me? Goddamn well I declare, have you seen the like? The walls are built of cannonballs, their motto is don't tread on me. Come here, Uncle John's band, play into the tide. Come with me or go alone, he's come to take his children home. It's the same story the crow told me, he's the only one he knows. Like the morning sun you come, like the wind you go. Ain't no time to hate, barely time to wait. Whoa, what I want to know, where does the time go? I live in a silver mine, I call it Beggar's Tomb. I got me a violin, I beg you call the tune. Anybody's choice, I can hear your voice. Whoa, what I want to know, how does the song go? Come here, Uncle John's band, by the riverside. I got some things to talk about here beside the rising tide. Come here, Uncle John's band, play into the tide. Come on along or go alone, he's come to take his children home. Whoa, what I want to know, how does the song go? Hello, everyone. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com and revolution.radio. It's a listener-supported network. This is the first week of the month, and so a new donation drive for the month starting up, and hey, you can help them get off to a good start. Head on over to freedomslips.com and show them some love. You know, they keep two streams of shows going just about 24/7. It's a great network, and we're proud to be part of it. And now, without further ado, I am going to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hi, Chuck. How you doing? Tonight, we welcome these special guests, Ava Bird, Azura Crispino, Mickey Z, Philip Ferruggio, and Frank Cordero. And so this Thursday evening, we are gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, in Port Orange, in northern Minnesota, in Queens, New York City, in Austin, Texas, in Des Moines, Iowa, in Los Angeles, California, and wherever you are. My recommended for tonight, Scott Creighton. His YouTube channel is called Church Dog 42. Church Dog 42. His latest is titled Notes from the Toxic, Dumb, Dumb, Useful, Idiot Left, a.k.a. the Real Left. Scott Creighton, YouTube, Church Dog 42. Notes from the Toxic, Dumb, Dumb, Useful, Idiot Left, a.k.a. the Real Left. And now available, the October edition of Penn Magazine, The Truth About 9/11 and Sandy Hook. Also, poetry by Michael Annis and more. Penn Magazine is at pennmagazine.us.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Ferruggio. Phil joins us each week. from Port Orange, Florida. He appears on a large number of websites, too many for me to remember to tell you about. World News Trust is one, Op-Ed News, so many of them. But we're very lucky to have Phil, and here is his column, It's the Empire, Stupid!
Okay, good evening. Good evening, Working Stiffs. Caveman America. You know, our nation has become like the character in the 1960 rock song, Alley-Oop. He's the toughest man there is alive, Alley-Oop, wearing clothes from a wildcat's hide, Alley-Oop. He's the king of the jungle jive. Look at that caveman go. The movers and shakers of this military-industrial empire have transformed my beloved nation into the world's caveman, replete with phony wars and occupations, threats to nuke opponents, etc. Thus, it is fitting that this caveman president and his caveman administration should choose a junior caveman to the Supreme Court. I say junior because his past behavior lends to that moniker. He acted like a kid even when he no longer was one. Now, this writer indulged in booze and chasing after girls as a teenager. My friends and I did occasionally drink too much on weekend nights. I did actively chase after pretty girls of my liking. Yet never did I force my will on a girl, whether I was wasted or not. Never. I was known as a bit of a ladies' man as a young adult and had countless experiences with young women while at Brooklyn College. Never, though, did I physically force any of them to be intimate with me. Ditto for my friends at that time. Never. This Kavanaugh fellow, by his own writings at that time, drank way too much and boasted too much of sexual conquest by himself and his buddies, in writing. So it is this caveman complex that seems to resonate inside of the minds of many men who have apparently had it too easy. This writer had many friends in high school and college who had to work while attending school. I myself never received an allowance from my parents while in school. No, I had to find a part-time job and a full-time job over the summers. Matter of fact, I drove a yellow taxi cab for most of my final years of college and still played on the football team and acted in theater plays at school and drank beer and chased girls. If I am to judge this guy Kavanaugh, let it be for something just as heinous as his previous binge boozing and caveman attitude towards women. That would be torture. Reporter Amy Davidson Sorkin wrote a powerful piece July 24th of this year for The Atlantic magazine. She reports that Kavanaugh, quote, was associate White House counsel from 2001 to 2003 when some of his colleagues were turning out memos effectively allowing torture and throwing together plans for Guantanamo and military commissions that lacked crucial constitutional underpinnings. Some of the most notorious of the torture memos, she goes on to say, had been addressed to his boss, Alberto Gonzalez, the White House counsel at the time. Later, Kavanaugh was staff secretary for Bush. She then goes on to report that Kavanaugh, during his confirmation hearings for the D.C. Court of Appeals, stated that he knew nothing about the discussion of those torture issues until the general public did. You want to buy a bridge I'm selling in Brooklyn? Why would he say all this? Well, as Ms. Sorkin relates, by the time of those hearings in 2006, the news of these tortures had become a national disgrace. During those hearings, he gave then Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter, a Republican, an unqualified no when asked if he had anything to do with the issues relating to the memos, allegations of torture, rendition, or questions relating to detention of inmates at Guantanamo. Kavanaugh then answered Specter no when asked if he would personally sanction or participate in torture. Answering Senator Durbin, now this is 12 years ago, he said, quote, to Durbin, Senator, I did not, I was not involved and am not involved in the questions about the rules governing detention of combatants or, and so I do not have the involvement with that, unquote. When Senator Leahy at the time, asked Kavanaugh that if, as staff secretary to Bush, he saw any documents related to torture or NSA warrantless wiretapping. Kavanaugh answered that those matters were, quote, not part of my docket, either in the counsel's office or as staff secretary, unquote. What in the hell was Kavanaugh doing in those positions of government? Was he going out at noon to get everybody lunch? Perhaps we are looking at this all bass-ackwards. Maybe Kavanaugh belongs with at least four of the other men who now sit in those ridiculous robes. Let's take our distinguished Chief Justice John Roberts, who both of the two-party, one-party duopoly treated like the golden boy during his confirmation hearings. All the senators on that committee must have known that it was the same John Roberts who, as lawyer in the Reagan Justice Department, actually wrote the draft for what became the famous unitary executive principle. This terrible precedent stated that though a president must sign a law once it has passed Congress, he or she can state that it will not be enforced by the president. Imagine that. And how totalitarian element that may be. Well, according to the accounts of that time, Attorney General Ed Meese thought that Roberts' draft was too excessive and had to be pruned a bit. Of course, we come to Justice Thomas, the lapdog for Judge Scalia until Scalia passed away. Does anyone think that he would ever have been confirmed in today's cultural climate of equal and fair women's rights? Anita Hill came forth to her own utter embarrassment and shame and simply told the truth in the eyes of many, but not enough, it seems. She was vilified for being a scorned woman and career climber. So, dear Brett, you may be placed into a very select club. Wonder how many of the guys will share a few brewskis with you and, of course, tales of past conquests. One footnote. Two things, actually. A, remember, Fredo Gonzalez, when he was up for attorney general under Bush Jr., had worked with Jay Bybee and John Yoo, one now a sitting judge and the other a professor, what hypocrisy, to formulate what later became known as the torture protocols. These were created to get around the Geneva Accords, which forbade torture of any type. This caveman crap was already in practice at the time of Gonzalez's hearing, well known and discussed worldwide. Ranking member, good old Senator Joe Biden, later to be vice president under Obama, and now probably going to run for president, he actually said to Gonzalez, and I watched it, quote, I like you, and I'm probably going to vote for your confirmation, unquote. And he did. And B, if the idiot Democrats in 2013 did not change the rules regarding filibusters for presidential appointments, it would have taken 60 votes to break a filibuster. Thus, Kavanaugh would never have been confirmed anyway. Food for thought. Thank you.
Who are they? They say it's going to rain. Have you ever met a they? You probably did not know it, but you could feel it. It's cold. Like if there's a ghost in the room, it feels like the creeps. It feels like it feels in a scary movie just before some head appears in the dark window. You might have felt it sitting next to Uncle Bob at the Thanksgiving table. They did 9/11. They control the world. They killed JFK. They killed RFK. They killed Paul Wellstone and Martin Luther King Jr. They control what we see on TV, radio, and in the newspaper. They. This sentence is brought to you by me, sent out to you that we might become we, in the hope that someday we can conquer they. The New American Dream presents an American Hero Special. Recently, we honored patriotic singer-songwriter Toby Keith. He put a boot up their ass. Awesome. Then we honored General Norman Schwarzkopf, General Colin Powell, General Tommy Franks, General something-something Petraeus, and all the other generals out there in charge of our patriotic military who are protecting us from people plowing mountains with oxen and killing them before they fly those oxen over here and dive bomb us with box cutters and not allow us to worship in the churches of our choice. And then we honored Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who uttered those words that will live forever, in Catholic hymnals and on the sides of police cars, in the same awesome style of Madeleine Albright speaking about the children dying in Iraq during the sanctions. We came, we saw, he died. This week, we honor all of you who stand like zombies whenever the American flag passes by in a parade or when the national anthem is played at any sporting event, from seventh grade intramural checkers to the Super Bowl. You stand without even thinking, and for that we thank you. For if you had a brain or stopped for a moment to think of what you are doing, what you are being asked to do, condone America and its wars and killing in order to steal from other nations, you would crawl out of that stadium on your knees in shame. And for that, we salute you. You are not a prevert or a murderer or an insane person. You are an American hero.
And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by crisis actors of the homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and alleluia, while they sleep on through the alarm, the house afire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. The construction's underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway, to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system, and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with a message. Let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been, since 9/11, accomplice after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal. We find the president nut standing in the bed of a red 1994 Ford pickup in the Walmart parking lot, speaking to two cart pushers, two drunk guys, and two old ladies waiting in their car for the president to move so they can have the parking spot. "This," said the Cosmo, "the president nut, is the year of the apple pie. Pie, 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 pie." He said it to sound like there was an echo. He was speaking in a really big place to a lot of people. "This will be the continuation of the previous administration's program, Every Town Gets a Shooting," which was meant to be sort of like the Kennedy Declaration of going to the moon in 5 years. Anywho, well, you'll see terror like you've never seen it before, because this is America. Planes whooshing over the stadium, planes whooshing over the feedlot, planes whooshing over the soccer practice, and over people mowing their lawns. It's that time in America. And yes, there will be t-shirts. President Nutt held up a sample t-shirt for the two cart pushers, the two drunk guys, and turned to show the two old ladies in the car behind him the official Year of the Apple Pie t-shirt, with images of baseball, apple pie, hot dogs, and Chevrolet, and two hand-drawn red boobs on a stunning field of white. The old ladies honked loud, yelled. The drunk guys leaned on the red pickup, staring in at Buzz the space dog and Ricardo the space cat in the cab like they didn't believe what they were seeing. The cart pushers, well, they were just gone. Okay, said Cosmo, the president, not putting a clenched fist into the air. See ya, see ya, see ya! As the president nut stood in the back of the pickup, while Buzz the space dog tried to see to back out, using the directions of Ricardo the space cat hanging out the passenger window by his tail, in almost every town in the United States, fighter jets buzzed treetop level over Main Street, and the screams of those being tortured in the woods could be heard in town as faint howls, easily drowned out by Family Feud or Judge Judy. Newly formed Wednesday afternoon rape clubs held their first meetings as the Year of the Apple Pie National Committee met in Washington to plan the 500% raise in national rent costs, the decrease in food stamps, and the construction of 900 new overseas military bases. As the president nut sat down in the pickup bed, as Buzz the space dog could have took a corner, the national big kickoff for the Year of the Apple Pie was taking place in 19 towns across America. The scenario was the same in each town. As the fire alarms in the high schools were pulled to send the students running outside, the local National Guard unit shot them down one at a time. Meanwhile, the patsies were let loose from the kennel, running across an open field, finally being tackled by six deputies in front of the yellow line where the newspaper reporters and television cameras were gathered. Everyone cheered and bought T-shirts. Stay tuned next week for more activities for the Year of the Apple Pie, sponsored by Homemade Apple Pie in the bright red can.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, I'd hammer in the evening, all over this land. I'd hammer out danger, I'd hammer out warning, I'd hammer out love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land. If I had a bell, I'd ring it in the morning, I'd ring it in the evening, all over this land. I'd ring out danger, I'd ring out warning, I'd ring out love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land. If I had a song, I'd sing it in the evening, I'd sing it in the morning, all over this land. I'd sing out danger, I'd sing out warning, I'd sing out love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land. If I had a hammer, I'd hammer out a warning. Look, I got a hammer, and I got a bell, and I got a song to sing all over this land. It's a hammer of justice, it's a bell of freedom, it's a song about love between my brothers and my sisters all over this land.
right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, Des Moines Catholic Worker. Frank is a former Catholic worker, He is a Catholic worker. He's a former Catholic priest, a former federal prisoner and county prisoner in jail for fighting against the United States military. And we're going to get to hear the conversation right now between Chuck Gregory and Frank Cordero.
Chuck.
Well, hi, Frank.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, it's just yet another shift time at the Catholic Worker.
Uh-huh.
I'm moving so I can talk to you in one of our stairwells, the front one at the Dingman House. You remember it has all those banners and stuff up. From our 25th anniversary.
Yeah.
And I'm, yes. All right, here I am. So what's going on is that, let's see, we're in October. So one of the things that we're getting ready for is the 7th annual Occupy the World Food Prize rally.
Oh,
and yeah. Concert at the State House. During the World Food Prize ceremony.
Don't you usually get arrested at those?
Correct. For the last 6 years I've been arrested. Correct. You named it the occasion. So it's the 7th one, and this year we're not risking arrest at the rally.
Okay.
We're letting CCI, Citizens for Community Improvement, they're a great state organization. They have a wonderful advocacy against corporate ag on a state level, and they'll use the venue well. We're turning over the responsibility for the rally with no civil disobedience to a statewide group, and we're supporting it fully. We got Reverend Billy coming back, the guy from New York City, the No Shopping Choir. We've got some good things going on, but the point is, this is our seventh year. The whole premise of calling ourselves Occupy was that we would muster enough people to actually occupy the people's building and prevent the prize from being served.
Right.
And we never, ever hit that critical mass. Not even close.
Yeah.
And in fact, the staging that I was the one who, you know, was there at the beginning when we staged it, the whole idea was let's put it 100 yards away so we can have hundreds of people and then just take the place, thinking that someday we could get that.
Yep.
Well, the truth is we never, ever mustered more than 50 people. And because we were so small, this is the irony of life, we won a free speech contest with the state of Iowa against the state of Iowa and the prize, and they gave us $50,000. And that's kind of nice. But the truth is, we really weren't mustering the kind of numbers that at least I had hoped a campaign called Occupy would do. So I think we're going to do this as our last hurrah. The three of us who are like the working committee we're all getting older and tired. There's only three of us. So we're ready to throw in the towel. It's okay. Things just can't run forever. And we really didn't muster the numbers. But we're going to follow through and work on that. We do have the drone campaign, and that's going to be a constant. So our next big effort there is in December, the annual Feast of the Holy Innocents thing. And then follow up in March, where, again, I don't know if I mentioned it, we're taking on the Midwest Catholic Wicker Faith and Resistance Retreat spring location this year, next 2019. And we're doing it at the base, our drone base, on the weekend of St. Patrick's Day. So that ought to play well.
Yeah.
So, and we, again, we've got Jess and Ruby and Julie Brown, soon to be returning, who are going to be giving up housing and hospitality. At Rachel Corey, and that's all great stuff. Looking forward to continuing doing that for these good women, and our own communities mending as best we can, as I have spoken of in recent past interviews and weeks.
Yeah.
I made a knockout meal here. I'm kind of proud of it, with noodles and beef and lots of vegetables.
Well,
so, and I'm up again tomorrow with pork. It's the everyday work of the work of mercy that more or less justifies, just solidifies, you know, all the rest of our work. It sure does for me. At least that's the story that Dorothy Day and Peter Moore and the likes of those Catholic workers embrace, and I buy it. I really do. Yeah. Now the question, of course, is can we live with each other without killing each other? And that has always been a up for grabs question. You know, I just know that I'm more and more convinced that all this talk of isms, you know, and which ism is the one that's the most deadly and worse? Racism, sexism, homosexualism, all those. Any of the isms there are, I'm getting more and more convinced that if we're going to use that kind of empirical evidence that proves these things by statistics and size and, you know, that sort of thing, that's how they do these sociological stuff. I mean, because racism is organized oppression. It's got to be documentary, scientific. Well, if that's the case, I know a demographic of people who are the most destructive and deadly human beings on the planet. And they're only like 5% of the human race. So we're not talking male or female. We're not talking white over black. We're talking 5% over 95%. You know who that crowd is?
Well, I'm guessing it might be the oligarchs that are running things.
That would be a good guess. But the truth is, that's Americans. U.S. citizens.
Okay.
Black or white, poor or rich, born in this country as a demographic, easily identifiable and located, we consume more, we kill more, we benefit, and also are deadened. I mean, we are just. Oh, what's that? Have your can you? I you went out. Are you with me still?
No, I'm still here. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, so I mean, as a group of people, I'm going like Americanism.
That's what I think. The issue in the world
is Americanism, and anything we in America think that we have done. And to advance the human race in my generation, that has to do with civil rights and human rights and feminism and sexual rights and all of those things. All of those things we value a great deal, and I do. They're just too little, too short when you measure the fact that in our generation, the planet is up for grabs now. There's no real future three generations now down the road for kids without some kind of major human catastrophe, because they know the planet is sustaining what we're doing. And we're responsible for that, my generation and the people in my country, more than anyone else. And we're the disease that needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
So...
Well,
I'm quite convinced of that in these days of being elderly like we are, Chuck.
Come on. We're just kids. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm there's like of the people living in our community, six of us are all over 60.
Yeah,
so
right.
Something's happening.
Yeah.
And we all have the same seniority, meaning that we've all been here longer than any other younger person.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just a place for old people to come. Again, I'm complaining, but I'm grateful for whatever comes our way.
Yeah.
We do have a few good young folks, but God bless them. They have to put up with us. It's just crazy. Just crazy. This intergenerational thing is something else.
Today I
went to do Veterans Hospital pickups for two guys, Eddie Bloomer, and then Richard Flamer, who you guys, folks out in your audience know of Richard. He's one of your regular speakers.
Yeah.
He's still up here, and he just got a catheter removed from his penis. It's great. He says, "I'm a free man." I mean, the poor man, the test. The things we have to do as old people to stay, there's no dignity anywhere.
Yeah,
and Eddie was getting his eyes looked at, and he had to have sunglasses. And we're all just crawling into the car in the van. We're quite a mightly crew. I've known these guys for 30 years, so I guess this is what happens.
Well.
That's my day. Geriatrics in Iowa. We're just an open nursing home trying to make it through the day. No, that's not true. There's some really nice young people here.
Yeah.
And there are really young people around. I'm just saying the old guys seem to hang out.
Yeah. Well, Frank, thank you.
Bits and pieces you get from me sometimes.
Indeed. Well, some great pieces. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Talk to you again next week.
All right.
All right. Bye bye.
This portion of tonight's program is being brought to you by the Underpants Bomber, the DC Sniper, the Times Square Fizzler, and the Al Qaeda Conclave Mosque Corn Palace of Mitchell, South Dakota. Hola is great. Wait, no. Allah is great and also most awesome, more than Zeus and other guys. How's it going? We are new to your country. We want to kill you and take your Wii Sports software. Our high-rise lairs are too, how you say it, more of dude caves and not too gnarly and not cool for real bowling. For make benefit glorious nation of Kebabistan. death to Peyton Manning and NASCAR's and WWF. We come from a very organized, well-kept, well-swept cave in the mountains of Afghanistan, far, far up in sheep nosebleed section. We did 9/11 and other things like the 93 World Trade Center bombing and other stuff for sure. Lots of other stuff that we did. We are not the FBI or the CIA. Ha, that's for sure. And for sure, you would be a silly person who does not fit in your neighborhood to think so. We have nothing to do with George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George Bush, the senior one who sits in the front row at the World Series, or Obama, Bin Laden, Oy Vey, Barack Obama. Thank you very much. Happy times. Have a good day, and please to stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. Keep it real and be always awesome. The United States is not a police state, and you would be a fat communist soccer lover wearing Slederhosen and a tiny Bavarian hat with a feather and tight jacket and knee socks with buckle shoes who does not fit in with the rest of the family at Thanksgiving dinner if you thought so. There are not police everywhere. You do not have to go where the police put you in order to hold your sign and have your freedom of speech like a Bolshevik perched atop a potato crate like a stranded nanny goat. This is America. There are not thousands and thousands of people making their living off of the war on terror and Homeland Security, the Border Patrol, the U.S. Army, the airport, box cutter, shampoo, bazooka up the wazoo, finder guys, the video game industry, the bullet industry, the casket and handcuff and easy bake oven secret spy camera industrial complex. It's just not a police state. The police are not shock troops protecting the rich against the poor. It's not. Say it. It's not. Our next guest of the evening is Azura Crispino. Azura Crispino joins us from Austin, Texas, where she is a philosophy instructor at Austin Community College. Azura often speaks on prison issues, and we'll see what she speaks about tonight. Azura Crispino from Austin, Texas.
Hello, New American Dream listeners. Let me start out by saying that if you love hearing my voice and hearing me once a month on New American Dream is not enough for you, then today is your lucky day, because next month I am going to be launching a new podcast in cooperation with Incarcerate US, which is the only social media platform that is created by a current prisoner in conjunction with prisoner reformers and prison abolitionists that connect people who are part of this movement together on social media. And we will be launching a new podcast entitled What Works Prison Abolition with Azura Crispino. I will be interviewing movers and shakers of the movement to ask them what worked, what were your wins, and what didn't work, what were some of your losses and mistakes, and most importantly, what did you learn from them? So I will have more details for you on next month's New American Dream, but that is coming up. All right, let us do a quick three-state overview, starting with Pennsylvania, where they continue to be dealing with some interesting issues regarding their mail. So if you are writing to a prisoner in the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections system, you must now send the letter to St. Petersburg, Florida at P.O. Box 33028, including the inmate name, number, and institution. You must now include a return address. Your letter will be scanned and forwarded to the prisoner, who will not receive your actual physical letter. The claim is that there were people getting sick in the DOC because of some contraband substance that had been found on some letters. We're very concerned about what this means for the ability for people to be able to write quickly. Obviously, it means that if you live in Pennsylvania and your mail is now getting routed to Florida, it's going to take a lot longer for you to be able to write your loved one. We believe that this is going to further isolate prisoners. So we just encourage everybody to be writing people in Pennsylvania, keeping in mind these issues of the new address. In Ohio, we have several interesting updates. One of them focusing on anarchist prisoner Sean Swain. Sean has been on hunger strike for more than 30 days. He has gotten caught up in a web of a very interesting new policy of the Ohio Department of Corrections. It used to be the case that if you committed some sort of infraction violation, that you would go in front of the Internal Review Board. So let's say that you're caught with contraband, you would go in front of the Internal Review Board, and you might be punished by the Internal Review Board, but they couldn't change your classification, that is your security rating, until you went in front of the classification panel, which would then be able to make that change. And then over a year ago, the Ohio Department of Corrections decided that they were going to have a new policy called the Serious Misconduct Panel. And you could be brought in front of the Serious Misconduct Panel for serious misconduct. And this panel has the ability to immediately increase your security level. And the reports that we're getting out of Ohio is that hundreds, if not even 1,000 prisoners, have been caught up in this SMP. Prisoners have not even been given an updated handbook. One told me that when he went in front of the SMP, the only way that he even knew how this panel functioned was that he ended up taking a piece of paper from their desk so that he even knew how to defend themselves. Another prisoner told me that nobody in his unit has even been issued handbooks regarding this new policy. It's unclear why a prisoner would sometimes go in front of the Internal Review Board and sometimes go in front of the Serious Misconduct Panel. Now, what does this have to do with Sean? There was an article written and attributed to Sean that advocated using drones to drop tobacco into prisons and then using the money made from that contraband to drop weapons into prisons in order to engage in revolutionary violent action. You know, I'm a pacifist, so that's not the sort of thing that I would be doing, but I also think that it's free speech. An activist came forward and admitted that she had written the piece. Sean had not written it. In addition, there was never any proof that Sean ever owned this piece of paper. It was not found in his cell. There's no direct evidence that he wrote it. However, he was brought before the Serious Misconduct Panel, found guilty, then he appealed it on procedural grounds. Now, the head of the Department of Corrections, Gary Moore, retired, and on his last day on the job, found Sean's appeal on procedural grounds to be sufficient and granted his appeal. However, then Sean was brought back before the Serious Misconduct Panel and found guilty again, which is why he's currently on hunger strike and has been for more than 30 days. Now, please understand that this is a wider issue, because when the Serious Misconduct Panel is able to increase the security level of a prisoner, then that means that this person is now headed towards administrative segregation with much less oversight than was previously the case. So what we're seeing is a massive increase in the prisoners that are now being held in solitary confinement conditions, so that while they're awaiting an administrative segregation bed, they're being held in the hole. And I understand that both of those are solitary confinement, but for those who have been there, they tell me that administrative segregation in state Ohio State Penitentiary is slightly less uncomfortable of torture than being in solitary confinement is at another institution, because at least you have some privileges like access to your property, etc. So we're concerned not just for Sean, but for hundreds, if not 1,000, other inmates in Ohio that we know are being brought in front of this Serious Misconduct Panel. Some of them don't even know what the process is and are finding themselves being punished by a year in solitary confinement. So, for example, we heard a report out of Lucasville. You may remember, one of the most violent prisons in the country, home of the second most violent riot 25 years ago, the Lucasville riots, where at least one prisoner has been given a year in the hole for one fight, which he didn't even instigate. Please understand, normally for one fight, you'd get a week in the hole. Maybe 30 days if you are the sort of person who does this a lot. But for people to be looking at a year in the hole is insane. Now, I personally believe that the Department of Corrections is doing this in order to increase the number of prisoners that they have in solitary confinement in order to convince taxpayers that they need to build another supermax prison where they would now hold these people in administrative segregation. So effectively, we have a whole bunch of people going in front of a kangaroo court for doing nothing, right? In Sean's case, we're talking about words that were posted on a website that he didn't even write, finding themselves looking at a year in solitary confinement conditions, or potentially worse, because with the increase in security rating, you'll also find yourself to be ineligible for parole. So for example, in Sean Flynn's case, he comes up for parole in 3 years, right? We would all love him to go home. And however, if his security level remains as high as it is currently, he's not going to be able to have access to any of the rehabilitative programs that he would need in order to convince the parole board to let him go home, which means that Sean may very well end up spending the rest of his life in an Ohio penitentiary simply because of all of these misconduct of the serious misconduct panel. Moving to Texas, we have another hunger strike from Jason Walker on September 7th, 2018. And here is his note. It's me. I need help now. Legal, political, only help I can get. On September 5th, 2018, I was on my way to the disciplinary hearing around 10:20 a.m. that was being held in 12 buildings. When I got to the crossover gate by the Fee Chow Hall, a white female officer named Allen stopped me and asked where I was going. I told her to my disciplinary hearing. She asked to see my pass, which I showed her. She then called Lieutenant Sarton, who was by a chow hall, and he came. She told him my name and showed him my pass. He stated that I wasn't going to my hearing. He then told me if I didn't shut up, he would do something. I asked if he was going to hit me. He said, I just might. I told him I was going to write a grievance. He told me I wasn't doing nothing because I was going to lock up. He handcuffed me, then had Lieutenant Rick take me to lockup where I now am. This was a deliberately anticipated and devised plan. On September 6, 2018, Major Hooper and the head warden had me go to the major's office handcuffed. I was met with very vulgar language, was called all kinds of motherfuckers, and told to make people stop calling ombudsmen and to stop posting blogs or he'd make it hard on me. He insinuated that he'd have me suffer consequences if I, y'all, continue complaining, contact people to let them know the situation. I fear the head warden is setting me up to be killed. In short, I went to the committee today and was told I was being dropped from a 53 line class to a line one. They took close to a year of good time from me and removed me from the general population and classified me as a 64 median custody. So for those who don't understand, basically, Jason has been in administrative segregation, had managed to come out of administrative segregation and be back in general population, and now, on the basis of this situation, finds himself back in administrative segregation. I wasn't given a chance to go to my hearing for the threatening an officer case, and just learned I was excluded this being done to stop me from presenting a witness, namely the laundry workers and Officer Phillips, who admitted that she didn't hear me make any threats. And
unfortunately, there's no time for the rest of Missouri's extremely compelling commentary, but it's time for a station break.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern, and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exopolitics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest of the show is Ava Byrd. Ava Byrd is a poet living in Los Angeles, California. Chuck is going to right now try and contact Ava Byrd in Southern California.
Hi, Chuck.
Well, hello, Ava. You are live on the air. It's great to hear your voice.
Great. Thanks so much for having me. And is Mike there too?
You bet.
Yep, I'm here.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, Mike and Chuck. I'm good. I'm good. Happy October.
You betcha.
Yeah. I've got a couple of new ones that I just wrote, and I'm going to share them with you guys this month. They're so new. One doesn't even have a title yet. But I'm going to start with Back to Acid. This is called Back to Acid. Drop the acid tabs, or better yet, tablespoons. Mix it with cayenne and water. Let it fizz. Drizzle some lemon and add a little honey. The local bees, they make it for us. Just balance the sweet and acidic. Mixing the pot, it hits the gut good, gives you that high. Back to acids, the lactobacillus, acidophilus, the probiotics for guts, minds, and hearts, intestines. It's all connected, intertwined, connections to the one, the many. It all comes down to the flow, the circulation, the amount of fairness, balance, the body, the mind, the heart, the guts, the spirit. I hear it. I hear it again, like bell chimes. Listen, it's time to take those enzymes, Digestion is key. Time to swallow the pill. The pills that have life in them, at least 10 billion, that pack a punch to the insides. Hearts beats, pounding guts, and minds again. That one, yes. The one that makes us run. Run quick for the hills or the water closet. Flush the waste nicely, responsibly. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. Stay pure. It's all interconnected with the wind, with the rain, the sun and stars, the moon and water. Running outside, inside, we're made up of it. It's us. H2O, hydrogen and oxygen, the holy acids and fluids, mixes that blood running, running, running and flowing, gushing at the chance to clean itself and be free naturally through movement and flow and staying in, happy to be doing the inside job, that behind-the-scenes work of recycling and removing waste, giving and grabbing oxygen, delivering the goods, again and again, back to the acids, the aminos, the building blocks of cells, proteins tripping on their way to the brain. It's not all in the head, it's everywhere. And to offer up energy and life wrapped inside a little circle. All right. Next poem is wandering and waiting and wondering, spinning and spotting, tripping, leaning, swimming, beaming, floating, screaming through up, down, hills, tunnels, chills, thrills, and free of bills, walls and dark halls, balls, gall, nerve, shock, and swerve, near miss, missing, kissing bliss, the old days, the good days now, making it, bringing it, in bringing it back here from scratch, the blank canvas, empty and alive, freedom, free, me to be, we stand grounded, deep roots, through, across, forests, oceans, stars, sands, crusts, rivers, must come together and merge as hard cells, strong, beaming, luminescence, individually and collectively, bumping lightly, cell structures, naturally, moving along, busily, work to do, like to give, purifying, cleansing, clearing, Oz, and being here in the moment, now, a gift, a present, our presence, effervescent, vibrating in beats, hearts, sounds, vibrations, resonance, frequencies, trees, communicating, underground, on the down low, quiet conversations with deep roots, connections, webbed through galaxies, universes, yet still down to earth, still here after all these years, all these wars and attempts on your being, the everything can't be destroyed or conquered, the soils and spoils, in endings, unending, beginnings, never ending, gloriously giving birth to the next moment, unfolding in the mastery of the infinity of her being. She still always shines brightly. Okay, I have one more. Bubbles. Bubblies. Bubbles bubbling. Bubbles bumping. Bumping shells. Softly connecting dots. Cells of connections moving. Moving busily along freely. Floating. Moving with ease and precision. While busy. Busy cells doing the work. The job of life, giving blood delivery, flow, everything flowing, pushing through gunk, pushing through metal, pounding away softly, gentle pounds of beats, beating steady, even rhythms. Just keep doing it. Just do it. Get it going. Anyway, through sickness and health, dancing cells, working and playing, getting the job done, together. Microcirculation. Abounding circles and rounds, circling the system, bumping, bubbles in constant movement, continuous flows, senses, insinually, sinewy, soft shells, strong sheath, secure. No holes, no leaks, thick structure. Think thick, impenetrable, beaming light inside out, shining. Brightly, she shines in these cells, float free all around the galaxy. Of the almighty oxygen and water again, it comes down to breath and liquids and gases. And here, all our asses sit and wait for eternity. Something out there bright shining. Where is it? It's happening right now. Get it? It's in you and me to make the eternity bright and good and happy and shiny for everyone, see? Not just us. It's not about you and me either. It's way more than that and so much more. I hope to be in here and out there somewhere. And I know I am already, but still, I keep still to feel the pushes and the flights and the floats and the sweeps. And dreams. It feels good to just be out there, shining bright. Okay, what a nice ending to leave it on. May ye shine brightly.
Well, Ava, we are so lucky to have you as a regular guest. I love the poems you share, and we are really honored that you try your brand new stuff right here on the New American Dream. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. I'm glad that you appreciate it. And thank you for listening, and thank you for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, you bet. Talk to you next time.
Okay. Bye.
Our next guest of the show is Mickey Z. Mickey Z is a writer and activist living in Queens, New York City. And Chuck visited with Mickey earlier, and we're going to get to hear that conversation right about now.
Well, everyone, once again, it's the beginning of the month. It's October, Halloween month, and all that stuff. And that means we get to talk to our friend Mickey Z from Astoria, New York. Welcome to the show, Mick.
Thank you, Chuck. A pleasure to be here, as always.
So, how's fall treating you in New York City?
Not too bad. It's probably the first month in a while where you're not going to hear me complain too much about the weather. It's a little warm for October, and that means that the subway platforms stay a little warm, but it's, you know, good sleeping weather, cooling off, and we earned it. We had an awful summer here. How about you?
Storm season, you know, we're getting daily thunderstorms. The heat's cool, you know, gone a little bit, but not that much. It's pretty typical Florida October.
Okay. So what's on your mind today?
What do you think about all this this Kavanaugh stuff?
That's a big question, but the holistic answer is that it's kind of par for the course as to where we are now in terms of Trump's America, and also a further indication of how male supremacist our society is, that a guy like him can even be remotely taken seriously, and just how the most recent development being Trump mocking Professor Ford, and and saying it's a dangerous time for men. And so I think it sounds like that, you know, a pretty serious backlash to a year's worth of the Me Too movement. But in some ways it's also business as usual, because you and I are old enough to certainly remember the Clarence Thomas hearings, where while the allegations weren't nearly as serious, they weren't taken very seriously, and Anita Hill at the time was demonized. And you just realize that, you know, progress has been made, but in many ways we are mired in a very ugly cultural mess.
Indeed, indeed. Nothing ever changes, it seems.
Well, certainly not enough, You know, I don't know what the makeup of the Senate. I mean, I think the Clarence Thomas hearings were about 27 years ago, like right around now, if memory serves me correctly. And I don't even know what the makeup of the Senate Judiciary Committee might have been then in terms of male to female, white to people of color, and so on. So, like, you know, I don't want to downplay that there have been steps taken and so on, but it just seems like so much of whatever progress has happened that Trump and his people are super dedicated to taking back whatever they believe is they're entitled to.
Entitled is a very appropriate word. Certainly more appropriate when you're talking about all these rich white men in government than when they try to apply that term to those of us who maybe are surviving on Social Security, which we paid for. It's amazing how things are turned around. It's all topsy-turvy.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost an embarrassing cliche to call it Orwellian, but it's without a doubt. I mean, people on Medicaid, Social Security, et cetera, who have been paying into the system, and to me, whatever taxes I've paid in my life, I'm happy to support people who are in dire need, but yet somehow that's called entitlement. And it's a controlling of the language and the narrative that that very much sets a narrow parameter. I mean, I was actually reflecting on this, you know, here in this like social media age. I remember going back years ago when Noam Chomsky and Edward Herman wrote the book Manufacturing Consent, and then they made a very long documentary about Chomsky. And I remember really being informed by those documents. And at the time, like how he talked about how they just keep narrowing the parameters of debate, but then they welcome very lively, even aggressive and angry debate within those parameters. And I remember writing about that many years ago, and I might have defined it like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal are the parameters, and anything outside of that to the left or the right is not within the discussion. And today we live in, I guess it would be in the way Trump would frame it, the fake news world, CNN, and then Fox News. And then, so they debate each other and give the impression that we have this lively democracy, but it's just the method of transmission has changed, and it gets to us so much faster now. But it is a rather depressing thought to think about how the general concept of manufacturing consent stands. They're just better at it now because they have these new methods of transmission, and also they give people on the so-called fringes, they can have their own YouTube channels or whatever it might be, because they're not going to affect anyone anyway. Because the only one that are setting any kind of policy are those that very carefully fall within the parameters. So there's a lot to digest here. I mean, it's fascinating to witness, like you said, the use of language, and then how corporate media works hasn't changed. And then even with the recent progress of women being heard and believed and feeling safe to come forward, you could still have this guy within a matter of days confirmed to be on the Supreme Court, a position for life, which that's a if you want to talk about that concept, just think about that. Like, we're the only, U.S. is the only country, I believe, that has Supreme Court justices for life. And so much of it is worthy of discussion and debate and definite change, but we get caught up in the Twitter wars and so on. And like I said, nothing's changed except the methods of transmission and the speed at which the so-called debate is being transmitted.
Yeah. Well, yes, I think I would like to talk about the appointment for life thing, but before we leave the topic of media and social media and their control, you mentioned, yeah, people can have their own YouTube channel, but then some people can't have that, or some people can't have their blogs and their alternative views. I'm thinking in particular, one of our monthly columnists is Jim Fetzer, and his blog on Blogspot was summarily removed last week.
What was his blog about? Does it have a general theme?
Basically, if you can think of a conspiracy theory, he's probably talking about it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I don't want his blog to be removed. And I guess, yeah. I mean, that's like it's an interesting subset of debate where I have witnessed this where people take very strong opinions on an issue in which there'll be people who are either competing with him in the same area, let's say conspiracies. There's, like, what's fascinating to me is in the world of conspiracies, like, the general public will lump the conspiracy theorists into one group, but within the conspiracy theorists, there's a lot of animosity and downright hatred between them. So they could do things like report him and like false reports, and he's talking about hate crimes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so he becomes sucked into that and loses his blog. And then I guess his enemies believe they did something worthwhile. But until you just mentioned it, I didn't even know any of this was happening. And you say to yourself, like, it's not to downplay anything he's doing, but it's what a brilliant system of manipulation in which they can get us to feel like, oh, we have this platform, we're going to speak our truth, and then other people say, I don't believe in your truth, I'm going to come after you. And that battle is going on completely off the radar screen, that the vast majority of humans on Earth didn't even know that that happened, as opposed to if suddenly CNN was taken off the air, obviously the vast majority of humans would know that. So it's so carefully constructed that we no longer could even see the blueprints, and even the people participating in it don't even necessarily see the role that they're playing. Yeah. You know, like if you become a CNN reporter or a Fox News reporter, you probably didn't sit down and say, oh, I see what's happening in this media manipulation, so I know where I want to fit in. You just might have grown up in a scenario where you internalize values that match Fox News, and then you have the skills and you become a so-called pundit on them, or whether it's, you know, CNN. And so there are definitely many people with worthy opinions and provocative ideas who are out there and might even wind up being the ones who get shut down. Mm-hmm. And like just adding to the madness of the entire situation.
And you know, perhaps the most insidious part is that these people that are on CNN or Fox News or, you know, all the major ones, you know, whatever way they might be slanted, they probably believe what they're doing, believe in what they're doing.
Yeah, I believe that the same way that any high ranking politician, at least on the level of Congress and up, you have to have internalized certain values to even be considered for that position. And, you know, like a local city council person or so on can affect change. Like they could get a stop sign put up on your block, which could save lives. But like once you decide, hey, I want to run for Congress or the Senate, or, you know, and then go on from there. Or I want you could be a local news person that covers a local story and helps people. Or you could be some international pundit on CNN or Fox News. I think a big part of it, besides the obvious who you know and all that, which plays into that, of course, is what is how deeply you've internalized certain values that it becomes second nature. You don't even have to ask the crew on Fox and Friends or on the morning CNN show with Cuomo. Like, you don't have to even ask them what they think. We already know. With like whatever news breaks that morning, you kind of know where they're going to go, and they know where they're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I agree with you. It's there has to be, there would be incredible cognitive dissonance for them to be on day in and day out and convincingly pretend that they believe in something they don't believe in. And they also believe in getting paid and being on TV and having power. And one of the things that has changed in the social media era is this need for what they call hot takes. So you have to come out each day and say something in a sentence, you know, like an elevator pitch type of sentence that's going to blow people's minds. They do that in the sports world now. Like,
yeah.
If I got on TV right now and said, you know what, this is the year that LeBron James is no longer the best player in the NBA. If I had any audience at all, Twitter would blow up that I said those that hot take. And so the same mentality, and it's, you know, to witness it from the outside and realize that we're talking about human lives at stake here, and it's very, very discouraging. And I guess it goes back to a lot of conversations you and I have had in the past year and a half about what constitutes activism. As like, if you break down this system, you realize how much impact can you and I have, but we can certainly help people within our lives and people within our reach. And so we do that, and at the same time we do this. We come out and we talk, and we hope maybe someone takes one little idea you or I said today and takes it in a whole new direction. But in day-to-day life, you try to not be like those people who are just in it for power and to manipulate people to believe that they have something that are worthy of listening to. It's such a deeply embedded system, it's difficult to imagine it collapsing, I guess, until it does.
Really? Exactly so. Well, of course, we used up any time we might have had to talk about the appointment for life, so maybe we'll do that next time.
I would love to. Yeah.
It's been a pleasure, as always. In parting, let me just say, go Sox.
there's a term I think they use in therapy called doorknobbing, where it's like you say something just as the session ends and you just doorknob. A lifetime Yankee fan here, huh? well, you know what? I'm not as attached to sports as I used to be, and I can recognize brilliance when I see it. The Yankees are really good, but the Red Sox this year are on, they're playing. I mean, it's a rarity that you see that many wins and that good of a team. So,
indeed, it's going to be a heck of a series one way or the other.
Yeah, I want the Yankees to win, but I also like when talent and excellence is rewarded. So I'm going to watch it with an open mind.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mickey. We'll talk to you next month.
Looking forward to it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Listen to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Sample and bang and I feel like
Bitcoin, Litecoin, Moneycoin, Yourcoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now it's time for My Big Fat American Book with your host, Charlie Rose. As we zoom in on our host at his big round table, sitting all alone in the studio before tonight's guest arrives, we're able to look over his shoulder as he writes notes on Bilderberg Group stationery for tonight's show. What is Charlie Rose writing? Let's have a look, shall we? The U.S. has lost its way. It should have been evident with LBJ, then Nixon, and we should have really realized it with Ford, but really all we wanted to do was live our lives and have fun and happy children. So, well, there was Reagan and Clinton and Carter and Bush and another Bush and Obama and now Trump. And it's almost so obvious now that we can't really ignore it, but we will ignore it as long as we possibly can. We will ignore it. What we really need is a manifesto or a great novel that will once and for all show us what we already know, what we knew in our hearts in 1963 and every year and every day since then. Yep, it's all about the lies, and it would probably be about money, too, because that's always in there. Torture in Waco and Oklahoma City and 9/11 in Sandy Hook, Tucson, Aurora. And there would be a lot more names of cities in there, Memphis and the Ambassador Hotel Pantry in Dallas. And see, you already know what I'm talking about. I just have to say the towns. And now drones is a big word in our culture, and all you have to say is drones, and everyone knows what you mean. And oh yeah, Fallujah. And there should be this essay or this novel that's not too long, or maybe really long, like a Russian novel, that when we read it, we would all say, oh yeah, that's just how it is. And then Obama would be in jail, and Bush would be in jail, and Clinton would be in jail. And there would be a big hearing in Washington, and it would mean something. And it would be on every TV on every afternoon. At the end of it, all these men and women, oh yeah, Condoleezza too, would be shown ducking before being taken to prison, just ducking their heads into the back seat of a police car by an overhead special copter cam. And then they would bring in all the high school history books and start going through them and start putting in the right stuff. They'd put big teacher red pen marks through all the made-up shit, like the moon and the Pearl Harbor attack and WMD and anthrax and the Gulf of Tonkin and Wellstone's plane crash, and put in the real stuff, the stuff they had in these other books and these big old cardboard boxes that they never were going to show us. Like the old photos in Grandma's closet with her and Grandpa drinking beer and smoking cigarettes, sitting on top of the old Model A. And the late night comedians would talk about real stuff, like the crap that used to be in the high school history books, and about how they used to talk about how one truck bomb did that to the Murrah building, and how they used to say that jet fuel took down those big NYC buildings, and how we used to say a whole airplane disappeared in that little hole in the Pentagon and that little hole in the ground in Pennsylvania. They'd say jokes about that stuff just as easily as Bob Hope used to talk about golf and airplane food, and we all thought it was the funniest crap ever. They would start talking about a whole bunch of stuff after that big meeting, things they never talked about before, because once you get talking, other things come to mind, like the minimum wage, the climate, the environment, doctor bills, things to help people live better. Then some people would say, hey, you know what else we could do? and they'd go fix up the old school in the middle of town and put in new sidewalks in the neighborhood around that old school. They would start tearing down the county jail and the prison in town, brick by brick. And then, all because of this one novel that said things everybody already knew, a bunch of people would walk to the CIA building and the FBI building and the Homeland Security building, and they would walk right in. Because they paid for this piece of crap building anyway, and then they would walk over to the fence with a razor wire, and they would cut it down. And they would help the people through, and they would put up this homemade sign, maybe with cardboard and crayons, and tack it up on a stick or a branch or a shovel, and it would say America on it. That's what might happen. All happen as soon as the person is born who will write this manifesto or clear, concise, inexpensive novel that will tell us all the things we already know. And all we have to do now is wait. Oh, hello, I'm Charlie Rose, and this is my Big Fat American Book. Tonight's guest is the author of the Walmart, Target, and Barnes & Noble Big Sellers, 50 Shades of Vampire Blood, The Six Sexy Superheroes Who Save Sacramento, as well as Biggest Kitchen, Bigger Hamburger, and Brighter Bathroom. We'll be right back after a word from the good folks at Soapy Suds Detergent. It's said to be really sudsy and soapy. We hope you'll join us. I'm Charlie Rose. If you stand for the national anthem, you might be an American. If you stand for fighter jets flying over the stadium, you might be an American. If you stand for the bombing of children, you might be an American. If you recite the Pledge of Allegiance, you might be an American. If you recite the latest from the TV nightly news as if it were not merely propaganda, you might be an American. If you pay for bombs that kill children, you might be an American. If you pay for soldiers who kill children, you might be an American. If you hate immigrants coming into your town, you might be an American. If your great-grandparents were immigrants coming into town, you might be an American. If you put your neighbors in cages because they are too poor to live without stealing because you have taken far more than your share, you might be an American. If you are the only one in the world who believes what is printed in American newspapers and presented as news on American television, you might be an American. If you believe that 9/11 was done by some guys with box cutters, if you believe that Oklahoma City was done alone by Timothy McVeigh, if you believe the United States government and United States government media official stories about Waco and the Gulf of Tonkin and JFK and RFK and MLK, you might be an American. If you believe that Senator Paul Wellstone's plane crashed in the North Minnesota woods on accident, if you believe you are the hope of the world, if you are at this moment driving full speed in your SUV back to your home and your electronic toys, after a vacation at grandma's house, watching three televisions inside your vehicle, hoping to get there in time to get batteries for your new bathtub bubble machine, you might be an American. We are proud to be sponsored this week by the Minutemen, guarding Americans' borders from poor people. Our own great-grandparents were poor, and they came here from other places, huddled masses yearning to be free. We are fighting for freedom from poor people, taking aim at frightened lasses crouching by a tree. We urinate on the Statue of Liberty. We defecate on Ellis Island. We've got ours crunched tight in our cold, dead, clammy hands. In just 60 seconds, we are able to desecrate the whole idea of America. We are the Minutemen. And now we look in on the PBS, BBC, NPR, WTF Thursday Night Special with Barbara Walters. George W. Bush, the later years, in repose, as it were. We find George W. Bush in his red velvet smoking pajamas in the library off the East Wing, in the family home in the Preston Hollow neighborhood in North Central Dallas, Texas, that is, swimming pools, war criminals. While the family is out enjoying the pool in the backyard filled with black gold, oil that is, thick, sludgy oil. And we find Barbara Walters following the old president as he wanders in his pajamas and red, white, and blue slippers at 2 o'clock in the afternoon across the street to his presidential library. He walks in, smiles, and nods to the people behind the counter, the unemployed people, the Iraq vets with no legs, to the big chair
with a longhorn rack in the middle of the big room next to the video rental carousel. He opens the Presidential Book of Wisdom and Just Plain Dumb with his picture on the front. The photo of him at Booker Elementary reading My Pet Goat upside down, along with all the other presidents up to now. He pages to his section and he begins to read the quotes, as he often does, just starts reading out loud, thinking that people will stop what they're doing and sit on the floor and listen. They never do. They seem to not even see him. The unemployed people and the old ladies behind the desk and the Iraq veterans with no legs just wheel and walk past him while he talks like he's not even there. They almost seem to walk right through him as if a ghost. There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you, fool me, you can't get fooled again. He looks up with a smile. Barbara Walters is not smiling. She's looking down, making notes, so he looks down again to continue reading from the big Presidential Book of Wisdom and Just Plain Dumb. Rarely is the question asked, is our children learning? A shudder goes through his whole body as he thinks of how scary it was to testify in front of the 9/11 Commission, even with Cheney in there. It was still dark and with spiders. I know how hard it is for you to put food on your family. We're fixing to go down to Galveston, and obviously they're going to see a devastated part of this fantastic state. They, our enemies, never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we. George W. Bush, with the big 43 in a blue circle on the stomach of his cowboy jammies, fixes his eyes on the ceiling at the thought of being there in Dealey Plaza that day, watching his dad and the others kill John F. Kennedy. That was the best day ever. They had red, white, and blue ice cream afterward. I promise you I will listen to what has been said here, even though I wasn't here. One of the things important about history is to remember the true history. You know, one of the hardest parts of my job is to connect Iraq to the war on terror. I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully. Again, he stops, thinking of being on Air Force One after leaving Booker Elementary and talking to Cheney and the others about how beautifully it was all going. It was like how, when as head cheerleader, he was a cheerleader for his alma mater, Yale University, also the head cheerleader in high school at Phillips Academy, Andover. When you planned a skit and you didn't know how it was going to work out, and it worked out beautifully. He nods to himself, thinking of how those days prepared him perfectly for his days in the Oval Office as Barbara Walters takes notes. Nobody said it was going to be easy, and nobody was right. When I need a little advice about Saddam Hussein, I turn to country music. I think we agree, the past is over. The aging president closes the book reverently, nods, runs his hand over the cover, closes his eyes, and falls asleep. Barbara Walters raises a hand to ask him a question, then, seeing her chance, quietly gets up and walks fast out of the library, putting her finger to her mouth to shush the old ladies behind the desk as the automatic doors open and shut. Shush. Shush.
Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. The American dream has dangled before our eyes for over 200 years. The American dream is the goal that we Americans hold on to when everything else is gone. The American dream is our ideal. Too bad it's just a dream. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns while the world wails, fists clenched, eyes blazing, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and hallelujah while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. We pick up our story after Michael M., staff member at Sun God Group Home, has sped off on his moped to tell the people at the workshop that there's a sit-down strike taking place in the Sun God driveway and they will be a little late. On his way, he swerved to miss a little girl, jumped the curb, and rammed his blue flake helmet into a war memorial for World War II at the city park, breaking the war memorial, and now the National Guard and police have stormed the park and taken Michael M. away in a National Guard helicopter. Where did they take him? Let's find out, shall we? Oh, but first, we take a peek at the activities of Homeland Mayor Dick Heavens. My Heavens, or D.H., or Dickless, is what they called him. Dick was the mayor of Homeland. He headed down the west side of Main Street. He and his wife took up the whole walk, pushing a two-handled, six-passenger monoshock stroller bearing the six H children, each wearing a camo safety helmet as they head to their daily dental appointment. Dick, not a tall man, wore a camouflage safety helmet as well, as did his wife. They each wore camo jogging shorts, t-shirt, tennis shoes, and socks. D.H. also sported a camo jock strap with protective cuff, extra large, outside his clothes. He reached down to adjust it to keep the cup from clattering to the sidewalk. Man and wife made the sign of the cross and stopped to watch three F-16 fighter jets scream over downtown at rooftop level, headed for the west side. They waited and gazed into the distance until they heard the bombs hitting their targets. "They're keeping us so free." Dick's wife, Jane, smiled. He nodded. They continued on their walk. The electronic blinking sign at the bank showed 101 for the temperature. They stopped to peruse the front window display of the Sun God is So Awesome bookstore and saw 10 copies of their pastor's book, Oh God, in 10 wire rack displays. 100 additional copies lined the shelf down the north wall. Another 100 or more filled the south wall. There was another display of the same book running down the middle of the store. Dick and Jane moved off down the walk and stopped in front of the library. Dick ran a finger down the outside of the Glass City announcement board to the band list. He silently read, Air Guitar, Paradise by the Dashboard Lights, Imagine, Daytime Lawn Watering, Harry Potter. He smiled to see Air Drums penciled in above Air Guitar. They passed six newspaper vending boxes, green, yellow, red, orange, gray, and blue. Each contained the same newspaper with its front page story detailing last night's mission on the west side of Homeland, the number of the enemy killed, the types of new weapons used. Dick halted when his wife stopped to answer her cell phone chimes. Yes? Oh, yes! We'll have to do that. Yes, yes, yes. Uh-huh. Oh, do. She had to yell that last do as another fighter group whirled over. Meanwhile, Dick had begun to visit with the bank vice president. One game at a time, said Dick. The man nodded. Take it to the next level. Again, the man nodded. On the same page, the man nodded yet more intently. Step up to the plate. The man nodded with his whole body. The man squeezed around the stroller, patting one of the kids on his helmet as Mrs. Heavens closed her phone. They pushed down the walk, heading toward a Mexican family. The father and mother each guided a child by the hand, and the father also carried a young one on his shoulders. The parents were young, barely into their 20s. Around their necks, each of the five carried an identification certificate in a wooden frame. The document had a gold American Housekeeping seal of approval and a color photo of June Cleaver in her 1950s frilly kitchen apron saying, Emilio Rodriguez is a human being. Each certificate had a 3-year expiration date. The mother pulled a rope wrapped around her bloody young hand. At the other end of the rope with a child's wagon bearing a metal box that contained a dead boy, a rosary, and a stuffed teddy bear. The child they were required to sacrifice at the border crossing at El Paso in return for passage of the rest. Hello! Mrs. H. stopped in her tracks and looked sternly into the eyes of the woman, who also stopped, showed the placard around her neck, smiled, curtsied, and said, "Hello," as was required. "Oh, no, Dee, the press." Mrs. H. nodded at a group of men and women on their knees crawling up the walk, each one holding a writing pad and pen and gritting their teeth. Sweat poured down as they competed, trying to reach the H's first. One stepped over a crying, naked, skinny brown baby. It stopped for a moment, thinking it was going to be picked up, then continued to screech. Dick and Jane stopped and stood straight, smiling wide. One of the female reporters, on her hands and knees, crawled between the legs of another to snap a photo of the first family and shout out her question. Another fighter group whooshed overhead. The reporters in the heavens froze until the rocket's red glare. Seconds later, "Mayor Heaven," she shouted, "American pie!" Dick smirked and pointed at her with her face caught for a second in someone's undergarments. "How long will the ban on daytime lawn watering last?" Dick put his thumb inside his forefinger and gestured. "Soon." Dick pointed at a male reporter on his knees. "Community college, what's on your mind?" "Yes, Mr. Mayor." The baby sucked air into its lungs and let out a desperate cry. "You've said you would address library fines, loose dogs, dandelions, and season pool pass prices. When will we hear something about those matters from your administration?" Dick smiled, gestured with his thumb finger, and began to speak. The baby fell to its side and tried to call out. Spittle ran from its mouth. With a mighty effort, it rolled to its back, raised its arms for its mother, and let out a wail that was drowned out by the roar and suck of an F-16 screaming over. The pilot gave a thumbs up as the baby's breath ceased. "Okay, thanks. See ya," said Jane. The reporters got off their stomachs, turned, and scribbled on their pads as they crawled away. The Dick and Jane family strolled along. They passed in front of the brick Homeland Jail, lined up along both sides of the walk. Sitting against the building and on the curb were women and children with some men mixed in. Heads down with eyes closed, sucking breath, their shoulders drooped as they sat smoking, crying, and moaning. Dick and Jane squeezed between them, forcing those against the wall to pull their legs to their chests. Inside the walls, as Dick passed on the left within 2 feet of the cell blocks, came the cries of those inside. Fingernails scraped on the concrete blocks as they tried to reach their children, whom they'd bounced on their knees the day before, whom they would not be able to hold again until those infants were young men and women. Many of the inmates were drug offenders. The war on drugs had been one of Dick's most successful programs. He and his advisors, notably his wife, had decided that drugs were ruining Homeland. Now, almost all the drugs had been arrested and sentenced and sent away on long prison terms. Well, then. Next, the first family stepped into the Homeland General Office. "Hi! Hot enough? Never enough. 10th anniversary. Congrats." The radio on low volume behind the counter said something about the number of dead on the west side in the past week. "Ford? Chevy? Red? Yellow?" Boom! Blood splattered over the front window as a policeman squashed someone's head. An assistant wheeled the Heavens children back for their checkup. Dick and Jane sat in one of the plastic primary-colored chairs by the window reading books about their family. The windows shook as if they might shatter when a bomber rolled overhead. The kids, one of the women behind the desk hollered over. Busy? Jane yelled back. Great, 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 said the person now invisible. Always, shouted Jane. Blood, thick and maroon, ran under the front door, spreading across the room. Dick moved his feet back to avoid it getting on his shoes. That's the news from Moon Rock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, a listener-supported station. So don't forget freedomslips.com. Find that donation button. Mike, thank you and good night.
Thanks, Chuck, for all the work you did to make this show possible. And thanks to our guests, Mickey Z, Ava Bird, Azure Crispino, Philip Ferrugio, and Frank Cordero.
Bugger.
See it, do you? How close we are to absolute chaos. The sick ones are sitting on their fat masses, eating and drinking themselves into a stupor, polluting the world without a second thought while it goes down the toilet. Nobody wants to do the nasty work. You know, the shit that we all just think about. Most good citizens are just along for the ride and then bitch and moan and complain about everything when it doesn't work out. Not me. Get it done.
Revolution Radio. Where we do the nasty work. www.freedomslips.com.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the stuff. And you got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio.